This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. When four friends got together to form the Williamston Theater just outside East Lansing, they knew that they wanted to do things a little differently. They didn't know just how different last season and this one were going to be. John Leppard and Emily Sutton Smith are the husband and wife who make up half of Williamston Theater's founding team. He's a theater professor at MSU and works as the company's executive director. She's an equity actress with a list of credits in New York and Michigan, and a sought-after voice as an audiobook reader. Emily's also the theater's director of development. And along with their friend, artistic director Tony Caselli, they hatched an idea during the time that they couldn't have people come to traditional performances. John, Emily, welcome to Stateside.
Thanks.
Thank you, April.
You guys and your artistic director, Tony, came up with an extremely original mode of presenting theater for the pandemic. It's called Strolling Stories. Can you explain to us how it works?
Yeah, we decided that we wanted to continue in our mission of, you know, telling stories and having stories available. And at the time, you know, any kind of assembly was just dangerous and nobody was doing it. And we also recognized that we have a place in the downtown business environment in Williamston. And so we created these pieces that you can come to Williamston and walk around town and listen to them. And it's connecting it to the place where we exist in Williamston. So the first one was just a history tour. We started saying, hey, let's just do something for free for the town so they could walk around and listen to some history. And we worked with the Williamston Depot Museum. And the hook is that there were all these fires that happened in the late 19th and early 20th century that really shaped what the town looks like right now as far as like building stock. And they were very dramatic stories. And so you can walk around town and sit on benches and look at the buildings that are there now and learn about what was there before. And then we have a wonderful playwright, Annie Martin, who is here in Michigan. And we've done a number of her plays before. And she said, hey, can I write an audio play for you? And we said, yes, please. And she wrote Harriet Oriana, which is a beautiful sort of modern day magic filled love story and also set in Williamston. And so you can walk around town and listen to it and experience it in the place where it's set.
Incredible.
It's been really fun.
Do you know how many people were able to experience these?
Oh, gosh, I haven't seen the numbers recently. Several hundred, though.
There are about 600 for the first one for the fire tour. And then Harriet Oriana.
I think it's about 100.
100 and some. Yeah, that one we charged for.
Yeah, we're charging money for the ones that are plays. So the free ones, you know, lots more people are listening to.
And so how does this work? You connect to it via your phone?
Yeah, you can. Yeah, you can do your computer or your phone. You know, you purchase the tickets for the ones that are paid on our website and you can download it through SoundCloud to your phone or you can just listen to it on your computer.
What's different about directing a production like that?
Well, as far as the play goes, Tony Caselli directed the play. And I know it was strange for him because he's used to getting his hands on everything. So he usually jumps out onto the stage, whispers in somebody's ear and jumps back off the stage and something happens. In this one, he's got headphones on in a different room because we were being aware of COVID. So nobody was with each other. And he had to individually work with people in separate spaces and try to get the voice acting assigned to us. So it was a little bit different in that we weren't all on top of each other the way we usually are. And then he had to edit it as well. And of course, stage plays don't get edited. You just send them out there and we do the job. So
all the new skills. You know, actors are also accustomed to having a few other ways of communicating with their audience visually. Was it difficult, do you think, to get the actors in the headspace where they could communicate just vocally?
I don't think so. All of the actors that were assigned to these roles are veterans of the theater. And so it was kind of fun, actually, just listening to each other and being able to react off of each other's voices. So we had a really good time just being able to lay the tracks down that way. It was a little bit more like film acting, where we could just go back and rework things and rework little sections of the play over and over again.
Right.
And come up with the final product that way.
You also produced a series of plays during lockdown called Voices from the Midwest. Emily, can you explain what they were made of and how you produced them?
Yeah, the Voices series, it was a series of three plays that we did between 2008 and 2010. There were three plays, one focused on women, one on men, and one on families. And they were some of our most popular plays when we first started. People loved them and kept saying, oh, can you do those shows again? So when we were looking for material for another Strolling Story, we said, this was actually Chris Purchase's idea. She said, why don't we revisit the Voices series? There's a lot of material in there that's wonderful. It's scenes and songs and poems and things like that. So we, you know, pulled together some of the creative minds behind those original plays and assembled some material that were our favorite pieces. And so we revisited them in an audio way. So you can see, or you can not see, but you can hear material from all three of those plays in the Voices from the Midwest Strolling Stories edition.
You mentioned that some of your content you were able to charge some form of admission for, but obviously the basic business model just got thrown in the blender this past year and a half. How have you handled the financial problem of not having ticket revenue?
Well, first we fired everyone. I'm not really furloughed everyone. We did get some PPP support. We got the first round of PPP support, and then we had to furlough everybody. And then we got another round of PPP support a couple of weeks ago. We just found out that we got a shuttered venue operator grant through the Small Business Administration. That's part of the rescue plan that the federal government has been doing.
Can I ask a question about that?
Yeah.
Because this is the first time I've spoken to someone who's gotten one of those grants. This is sort of like an end of the roller coaster arrival for this particular form of aid. Is it really helpful for the financial problems that have been going on all this time?
Well, money is always helpful. So yes, and I think it depends on the organization. It has been a program that has sadly been experiencing troubles in the outrolling of it. It has taken much longer. There are definitely some organizations across the country who have gone under because it didn't come in time. And because the program addressed both nonprofits and commercial entities, I think the commercial entities who lost more, who didn't have the support of maybe donors who were stepping up and saying, hey, look, we know you're in trouble, so we're still going to keep donating. I think some of those entities are just gone for good. Because we are a nonprofit and because we have this wonderful community around us that has been so supportive, we have continued to receive donations over the last 18 months. Some people have stepped up their annual donations. Some people have just continued their monthly donations to us to maintain that support because they knew that we still needed to pay, you know, the bills on our building and we still needed to pay our skeleton staff of people who are maintaining everything. And so we've been really lucky in that we've had that donor support. The SVOG grant gives us the sort of seed money to start up again. There's the ramping up that is very cumbersome as far as finances go. You know, we've got to invest a lot into a product to be able to sell tickets to a show, you know, getting that production pulled together, paying people to do it. And also it's a new reality because we are living in a not quite post-COVID world. And so there are safety measures that we need to implement. We have had to do upgrades to our HVAC system, and we're all taking training about how to keep people safe on the production right. side and also in the patron side. So all of those are new expenses for people in our industry. So the SVOG program is helping with that, and it's sort of helping launch us as we approach reopening.
As if all of this weren't enough, during the lockdown, your artistic director, Tony Caselli, was dealing with kidney failure. Can you update folks on how he's doing?
He's doing well.
Yeah.
He did suffer a very serious illness several years ago, and his kidneys were damaged. And so we knew that this was in the cards for him. And his wife donated a kidney to him. So
both of them are recovering.
Both of them
nicely.
Are doing well. Jeannie's doing well. He is recovering well. The doctors are happy with his progress. He's getting his energy back. He's actually sort of chomping at the bit to get back to work.
Sure.
his energy is wonderful.
Was there ever a moment when you just looked at each other and thought, we can't do this. We can't keep it going.
I think everybody had that moment, didn't they, over the last year and a half?
But I don't know if we did. I mean, every little fire that popped up, we sort of were able to put out. Part of it is we have great patrons. The first thing that happened was we had a bunch of flex passes, our season passes, and we still had 3 shows left in the season,
yeah.
Right? 2 shows.
Yeah.
And we had to call each of them individually and say, listen, here are your choices. We can give you the money back or you can donate it. And almost everyone donated the rest of their passes money back, which saved us. And that sort of helped us launch through this process of being able to sort of get the next grant or get the next bit of money and keep ourselves alive during this time. So I never thought we would go under.
I didn't think we would go under, but I did have existential moments where I thought, is theater going to be the same? Here we are, you know, what we thrive on, what our space is known for, what our productions are known for is the sense of intimacy that we create. We seat 100 people at any time. They're surrounding the stage. They're on 3/4 of the stage. It's all close. You can see the sweat dribbling down our faces when we're on mm-hmm. stage or watch mm-hmm. us cry. And, you know, you can feel the audience breathing with you. And here we are in the middle of a respiratory based virus that says, don't sit next to people. So it does make you say, how are we going to do this? And, you know, so part of the safety protocols that we're looking at is how do we keep people safe and still have that sense of intimacy, still have that human touch and the storytelling that makes live theater so special and such a visceral experience for both performers and audience.
Right. If you're just joining us, my guests today are the two minds behind Williamston Theater in Williamston. We're talking with Emily Sutton-Smith, who's the development director, and John Leppard, the executive director of the theater. He's also a theater professor at Michigan State University. I couldn't help but notice that during the pandemic, you invited a board member who's also a scholar to give a lecture on what was happening in Shakespeare's London and its creative community during the plague years. What did you take away from that?
That theater survives, you know?
Yeah, it was really interesting. She's terrific, and Shakespeare is her forte. And just seeing what happened back then, dealing with several plagues that came through England, she was really fun and really interesting to listen to. But also, it gave you a sense that, hey, life's going to go on and theater's going to jump back, because it did back then. And it will this time as well. Another one of these stories that's about to come out is an interview with Philip Effiong. He is another board member who grew up in Nigeria. And he was there as a child when the Biafran civil war took place. His father actually became the president of the country when they gave over to Nigeria. So that's going to be a really interesting one to come out in a little while. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, it's true, life goes on and theater certainly goes on, but the plague years in Europe also set the stage for enormous upheaval and social change. I mean, that's something you can see with, you know, mass illness and mass disease outbreaks in many parts of the world.
Yeah.
I don't want to overstate what's going on here in the U.S. or in Michigan right now, but do you think that we're headed that way now?
I hope so.
Toward upheaval?
Not toward upheaval, but toward change, positive change. You know, we see the evolution of awareness in the last year about the injustices in our society and the inequities. And we as an organization have really responded to that and are working to integrate a higher awareness into what we do and how we do it. In addition to just like treading water and trying to keep the theater from going under, we've engaged in several different workshop processes with regards to diversity, equity, and inclusion. We're, you know, looking at the way that we make decisions and the way that we create our space and make it a safe space for people, and how we can help diverse artists to feel safe in Williamston, and also the kind of art that we do. You know, who are the playwrights that we're reaching out to? Who are the designers and the directors who we are collaborating with? And can we make that be a more diverse representation of the voices in Michigan through our art? And so, you know, I hope that other sectors are also working in that same direction, so that, you know, equity is addressed all over.
Yeah.
And gets better.
I know that you did a survey of your audience back in the springtime to just see where people's heads were about sitting in a theater and sitting with others. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the things that people said, and with that in mind, how you're setting the stage for a return?
We got a lot of messages because we had some open-ended questions, and a lot of people saying, I don't care, I'm coming back. I'm vaccinated, I feel good, I'm coming back. There were some people who said, I don't want to sit next to a stranger. I don't want to sit shoulder to shoulder next to someone who I don't know if they're vaccinated or not.
Yeah.
Other people said, I will wear a mask if that's what it takes to get me back in your seats. So I think there are some evidence that suggests that cultural audiences have achieved a higher level of vaccination rate across the country. So, you know, the hope is that we are bringing together people who are conscious of their impact. And so they're going to be safe in their behavior, and that will keep other people safe as well. So we're definitely looking at lots of different options with regards to capacity and spacing. There are some limitations that we have on spacing between the audience and the stage. And because our space is so intimate, we're looking at shows that allow us to create that sort of buffer zone between actors and audience members. So there's a lot that's going into it. And from a production standpoint, there are a lot of safety protocols that we'll be following just in the rehearsal room, masking up and keeping people masked as long as possible. Masks are still one of the best ways to prevent the spread.
It ain't over.
Nope, it's not. No. But you know what? We are a creative sector. And I think that sometimes we do best and create the most vibrant and interesting cultural and artistic experiences when we're given limitations. This is a limitation. It's not an easy one. And I was never a virus specialist before this happened, but now I've gone through some training, and we're all going through training, and we're all learning a lot. And, you know, I think we will come through and we'll be better and we'll connect people again. And that's what we do.
Emily Sutton Smith is development director at Williamston Theater. Her husband, John Leopard, has also been with us today. He's the executive director and a professor of theater at Michigan State. John, Emily, it's been great talking to you.
Thanks so much, April.
Thanks, April.
Arts and culture coverage on Stateside is supported in part by an award from the Michigan Council for Arts and Cultural Affairs.